I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Rosanna Davison. We sat down in my house this week and I was glued to every single word she said. Rosanna is expecting twins in November after being told she would probably never be able to carry her own baby. She found out she was expecting identical twin boys during lockdown. Rosanna's daughter Sophia was welcomed to the world by a gestational surrogate in November 2019. Today, Rosanna speaks to me about processing the news of her pregnancy, her surrogacy journey, how she dealt with 14 devastating pregnancy losses, and how her husband Wes and her parents are her absolute rocks. This podcast will make you cry happy tears. After everything that she's been through over the past few years, I think I can safely say on behalf of us all that we are so happy for her. And I'm so grateful to Rosanna for being a guest on my podcast today. Rosanna, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you. I'm very honoured to have been asked to be on this.
I sent you an email a couple of weeks ago and I really thought it was a long shot. So I'm so unbelievably grateful to be sitting down with you today and having this chat. And I have just watched everything you've gone through over the last couple of years and it stopped me in my tracks so many times. It's given me hope, like many women across the country. And I just think you're so incredible. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. And I'm a big fan of the podcast and, you know, everything you're doing and the whole message of positivity and hope as well that you put out across social media and through this medium as well. So, yeah, I'm delighted to be a part of it, as I said. And I know we've been talking about doing it for a while.
Yeah, no, it's so exciting. And I kind of can't quite believe it was going to happen until I saw you in person. We're sitting in my house. So I'm just, like I said, so incredibly grateful to you for being here today, because I know you have a lot on your plate. And last week I was making vegetable soup in the kitchen and I had a big pot and Jamie, I was blending it up and Jamie was like, Georgie, Rosanna is pregnant with twins. And I just dropped the pot.
Oh no. I'm so sorry.
I couldn't. It was the last thing on earth I would have expected him to say. And I had to go over and pick up the phone and actually read it for myself to believe it.
Well, I apologize. I hope it didn't make too much of a mess or burn anyone. I think there was a bit of shock. I mean, even when we told the news to my family, so my two brothers live in London with their partners and we didn't tell them until I was past the 12-week mark and we did a big Zoom call. This was probably early June. And, you know, we sat down, we were chit-chatting for a little bit. And then I said, you know, we have a bit of news to share. And of course, the ears prick up. They're like, oh, juicy gossip. And, you know, I said, we're expanding our family this year, all going well in November. And they said, wonderful news. Is your surrogate pregnant again? And all of this, we gave them a minute to, you know, think about it. And I said, well, actually, I'm pregnant. And we're having identical twins and their faces. I mean, it was just amazing. We have it all recorded. So it was amazing to see their faces and the shock, disbelief, tears. They thought it was a bit of a joke until I stood up and, you know, showed off the belly. And then that day we had actually just, because I took the Harmony test.
Yeah.
So we had just found out the gender that day or the day before, and my my parents didn't know and Wes didn't know. I was the only one who had found out. So I'd prepared a cake with blue sprinkles inside. And I said then, okay, we're going to do a gender reveal. And so it was sort of bomb after bomb after bomb. And their faces were like, what?
So much
what
information
else are you going to tell us? And they were saying, you know, calm down now. There's a lot to take in. So there were actually little candles as well in the cake. So we lit them and blew them out and cut into it. And Wes and my parents were nearly, you know, shaking with excitement, you know, dying to know what we were having, and cut into it anyway. And the blue sprinkles came pouring out. So it was just a lovely way. It was sort of, you know, classic lockdown Zoom call, but a really lovely way to tell them and to record it all. So, we then went on to tell Wes's kind of family and a few good friends as well. This is, you know, around mid-June before we really got around to announcing it properly. So we kept it quite tight-knit amongst a tight-knit group for the first sort of trimester anyway.
Wow. And I'm sure you have such an amazing supportive group around you, and everything that yourself and Wes have been through over the last few years. I'm sure everyone, especially your mum and dad, just feel very protective of you.
They do. And, you know, they've been on this whole journey with us. I was speaking earlier in the week, or maybe last week, about how I didn't even tell my mum when I had found out in mid-April that I was pregnant. And I found out my birthday is the 17th of April. And the day after my birthday, you know, we had a lovely day. We were in, you know, heavy lockdown at this point. So the following day, I couldn't stop crying, which sounds kind of ridiculous, but I suppose as girls, we have these days sometimes. But it was just the most silly things, you know, a video on Facebook or a sad ad. And I think Wes walked into the kitchen and he goes, "Rosie, I found you crying 5 times today. What is up?" And I said, "I don't know. I feel so hormonal and emotional about everything." And so the next day I thought, yeah, I do feel a bit different. So maybe I'll just do a little test and check. And of course, it came up positive. But through all we've been through over the last few years, I've had plenty of positive tests. So I know not to get too excited when I see the two lines. So as I said, I didn't tell my mum, I didn't tell anyone. But I did, after a few days, contact a doctor I'd seen previously in Dublin. You know, I just said to him, just found out I'm pregnant, and I'm just not sure what to do next. Do you recommend I go for a scan or just sit tight and see what happens? And he said, "No, of course, come in for a scan." And at this stage, I thought I was a little bit later on than I was. So the scan, kind of, we didn't see much at that point. So he said just to come back the following week and he'd check again, because it does happen that you get your dates wrong. Did turn out I got my dates wrong. So when I went back for the second scan, we found a beating heart, which was, I mean, I haven't got to that stage before with the pregnancy. I've always lost them before we get to a heartbeat. So I did ring my mum at that point and just say, "You'll never guess what, but don't get too excited." You know, she's been through the whole journey, the whole heartbreak with me, the ups and downs, and the whole sort of medical side with me, the whole surrogacy journey. She was there in the room when Sophia was born. So she knows not to get too excited about these things. And she's had her own issues with conceiving as well in the past. So went back the following week, and the doctor, who, you know, knows about my history with miscarriages, just wanted to keep a really close eye on me. And he found 2 heartbeats. So I have all this actually recorded. I was recording the screen the first time around when, you know, we saw the first heartbeat, and I burst into tears and I was saying, "Wow, this is incredible. And I've never got to this stage before." But then the following week, he says, "Yes, there are 2 in there." And he just hear me going, "Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit," for the whole recording for about 3 minutes. So apologies in advance to my future children. That's how I sort of welcomed the knowledge that they were there.
And but was Wes in the room at this point?
Unfortunately not. No, Wes, because of COVID, Wes wasn't allowed to come to any of the scans.
So you're on your own trying to process.
I was
twins.
On my own. Shaking, I mean, crying, everything. And So it was quite funny to think back now. You know, the first scan, I rang him. I said, I don't think it's a goer. I don't think there's anything there. Could be a blighted ovum, empty sac. And then the next week I said, yeah, there's something there. And then the next week, yeah, there's two in there. So poor Wes was kind of going, God, what's going to happen next week? Well, we have three. I was almost scared to go in for the third time. So it was very exciting. And yeah, as I said, we have it all recorded, which is really nice as well.
Wow. So how many weeks are you now?
I'm 19 weeks now.
Okay.
And because it's identical twins, my due date is technically Christmas, the 24th of December, but because it's identical twins, they're usually delivered around 35 and a half to 36 weeks. So I'll be going in a month early.
And so, there's your 11 again, because you spoke on Sheila Shoga's podcast.
I did. Well picked up. I spoke with Sheila about numerology and how 1111 has been following me around a lot in my baby journey. We signed the contracts, the surrogacy contracts for Sophia on the 11th of the 11th, 2018. We flew over to Kiev on the 11th of the 11th, 2019 for her birth. And there have been just many other occasions as well that it's kind of hit us. I mean, I reached my 12-week mark on the 11th of June. You know, I'll have the anatomy scan, the kind of big scan on the 11th of August.
Wow.
But also my due date currently is the 23rd of the 11th, which on the 24-hour clock is 11:11.
Oh my God.
I nearly fell off my chair when the doctor said, yeah, I think we'll stick in that day as your due date and we'll see what happens. So
do you feel in a weird way that it was all mapped out this way?
Maybe to a certain extent. I mean, I do want to believe maybe that it has been, but then again, we've been through so much kind of ups and downs and you know, thinking that things will go well and they don't, you know, that it's hard to know kind of what to believe anymore. But I was actually saying to you at the beginning before we started recording that our surrogate, who's so lovely, she stayed in touch with me every month to celebrate Sophia's month birthday kind of thing. And she would have been medically allowed to, you know, medically cleared to get pregnant again this week. So we were actually loosely planning to start the surrogacy program again with our remaining frozen embryos in Kiev this week. Or last week it could have been as well. So if this hadn't happened, you know, if lockdown hadn't happened, which I think was beneficial and probably helped me to relax and to conceive, then, you know, might never have known that I could have actually carried a baby myself, and we would have got back on the surrogacy program and gone through, you know, it's an emotional time, surrogacy. It's an amazing route to parenthood and a very much a feasible route to parenthood. But it is an emotionally, I suppose, draining time as well. So just to think it's one of those situations, that movie Sliding Doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like that, or like it was meant to be.
And how did you feel about sharing the news last week? Because it's obviously, you know, you have your support network around you and you're in this safe little bubble. And then to kind of announce it, I'm sure you knew what was coming for you once you kind of said it out loud.
Well, firstly, I could not have predicted. I mean, the outpouring of love and support sent our way has just been overwhelming. It's just been unbelievable. I suppose I'm hugely grateful for that, first of all. But I suppose maybe our story was, it touched people. It was relatable in some way because, you know, unfortunately, so many of us do struggle with fertility, and those that are lucky enough to have children easily are probably grateful that they had an easy route to parenthood. So I think it's for anyone who does want children or does want a family, it's something we think about from a certain age onwards. So I think maybe our story just struck a chord with people. So first of all, thank you to everyone who has shown so much love and support to us. It's just been an incredible week. But yeah, so just to go back, we're in this safe space, I suppose, for halfway through the pregnancy, because I'm what, 19 weeks now, so I'm just over halfway through, and I felt nervous. I suppose when I found out I was pregnant, you know, as I said, I didn't get overly excited. But as the weeks wore on and, you know, I went through the whole morning sickness and the fatigue, it's not much fun, but I guess most women do go through that. And we were lucky, being in lockdown, that my husband Wes was at home and mm-hmm. he was able to take our daughter Sophia when I had to go for naps, which was every day. And the poor guy had to, you know, pop down to the shops for when I had cravings, urgent cravings, which was quite a lot, but he was a great support. And then, as I said, we just had our sort of, our parents really knew, and then a couple of close friends knew as well, and then we told our families. So I did feel very safe. And being in lockdown, I wasn't out and about. Nobody could see me. I was at home in my tracksuit, as most of, you know, the country was. So then I just had a whole range of emotions to process, I suppose, when I kind of started to feel maybe this will work out and maybe I'll reach the 12-week mark. And then, you know, I was giving myself these little marks to reach, like 12, 14 weeks, you know, into the second trimester. And it was all these emotions. So obviously our main emotion was just utter joy, absolute shock. I think we're probably still in shock. Every time I look down and see my tummy or feel a kick, because they're starting to kick me as well now. But other emotions, I felt almost nervous about sharing our news. I felt guilty in a way to the women out there who are struggling and still haven't had their, you know, baby joy yet. So because I've spoken a lot about my sort of compassion and empathy for anyone going through fertility struggles and what a lonely, traumatic, devastating road it can be, you know, how society is set up for families and for children and for babies, and, you know, how it's just tough to be in a position where people around you seem to be popping out kids and it's not happening for you. So I felt sort of guilt as well at the idea that I'd be announcing our happy news when, you know, I think back to all the pregnancy announcements I've seen on social media where you feel obviously completely overjoyed for a friend, but really sad for yourself when you see them. And then another huge emotion I had to process was reversing everything I thought I knew about myself. And I did touch on this, I think on Instagram last week, but over the past few years, probably since 2017, I've done a lot of work on myself to really make peace with the fact that I am somebody who can't have a child, I can't give birth, I can't carry a baby. And I became very comfortable with that. And part of, I think, the healing process for me was being able to speak openly with friends and family, with strangers. You know, if anyone said to me, oh, what's the story? Have you thought about having a family? Not that people really do. I think most mm-hmm. people are sensitive now. But if anyone ever did mention kids to me, I'd just say, well, I actually can't have a baby. We're going to have to go down a different route, probably surrogacy. So I was very comfortable in the end with being able to say that about myself. I was established in my head as the woman who just couldn't have a baby. My, you know, reproductive system was dysfunctional and that's just the way it was. And as I said, I was very happy about it, but I'd made peace with that. So then when this happened, you know, when I got pregnant with not one, but two babies, I suddenly had to reverse everything I thought I knew about myself and everything I'd spoken sort of openly and confidently about myself in the last few years. So that was a really strange process that had to happen in quite a short amount of time. And still I feel strange saying it out loud. Because it's like redefining who you are to yourself.
How do you feel then when you look in the mirror now and you see yourself with a bump? It must blow your mind every time.
Fast expanding bump as well. It does. I mean, I found it very hard to believe for a long time. And every scan, and I mean, at the moment I'm getting scans every 2 weeks, so they're keeping a close eye on me. It's just the nature of identical twin pregnancies, because they share a placenta. They need to make sure that the boys are playing fairly and they're not, one isn't taking more nutrients and blood than the other. And at the beginning then I had weekly scans as well. So I kind of felt like every time I went in for a scan, I just needed the reassurance that they were still in there. Now I'm feeling kicks and movement. That's, you know, great reassurance in itself. But still, it's hard to believe. And there's still an element of shock. And there's still an element of, right, okay, this is happening, but is it, or will it? Or, you know, even when we were expecting Sophia last year, it took me until she was 6 months, I think, to announce it, because I suppose when you've been through the trauma of pregnancy loss or fertility complications, you do set yourself up, whether it's, you know, whether you realize it or not, whether it's subconscious or not, you set yourself up for, what if this goes wrong? I have to prepare myself if something goes wrong, because it probably will. So for the past few years, I'd set myself up for failure. And that's another emotion that's sort of hard to reverse as well. It takes a bit of time. Mm. It takes a bit of belief. And, you know, it's taken, I'm lucky to have a very supportive doctor who's reassuring me every kind of week or 2 weeks that everything is fine and everything will be fine and the baby's growth is normal. So it's been, you'd think it was just pure joy and that's it, but it's been a whole range of emotions to work through, which is probably why it took me so long to feel ready to announce it as well. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to work through them.
I think before we knew what was going on in your life, you would have, you know, you're Miss World. You look like you have this perfect life. You know, a lot of us would have thought we don't have much in common with Rosanna because she has it all and we have everyday struggles. So I think when you went on the Late Late, I'll never forget that interview. I think the whole nation was just so shocked at the words that were coming out of your mouth. You know, when you said that you had 14 miscarriages, I think we all wondered how on earth you kept going and how you got through that time. And I think it was so unbelievably honest and brave of you to come out and reveal everything that had been going on in your life. Because, you know, we can easily hide things.
Yeah.
How did you feel after coming off that stage? I mean, it's so nerve-wracking going on the Late Late to talk about like a book or something, let alone some news like this. How did you feel supported in that time?
Absolutely. And again, I'm so grateful for the huge support and love I received after the interview. I remember having a wobbly moment about 2 weeks before, going, I don't know if I can go through with this. I had just actually chatted with VIP magazine and done a shoot with Sophia, and I just bawled crying through the interview. I couldn't get the words out because it was the first time I had told the story from start to finish. And I think all the buried emotions I'd had just came out. And I thought, how can I go to national live TV and just sit there bawling my eyes out? Yeah. I'll be kicked off the stage. Poor Ryan, everybody won't know what to do with me. So I can't do this. I'm not strong enough. So I had to dig deep. I think it's just one of those times, I suppose it's like going to an exam or writing a dissertation or something. You just dig deep into yourself and really find whatever strength you have in there. And I remember on the day then of the interview, I was quite quiet. I was getting my hair and makeup done at home, and I went on my own to RTE.
Oh, because did you?
I just didn't want any distractions. I just wanted to really focus on what I knew I wanted to say in the 15-minute slot I had. So even before the show, you know, I was invited into the green room and I said, no, I'm just going to sit in my dressing room on my own and just think about everything I want to say. And it was really important to both me and Wes to, I suppose, get the message across that you don't know what's going on in somebody's life. And unfortunately, a huge amount of women and couples do go through struggles with fertility, with conceiving, with miscarriage, whatever it may be. And whatever journey you're on, I think the emotions can be very similar for people. It's just the feeling of being lost, not knowing where to go, maybe feeling ashamed to talk about it. So I just really wanted to, you know, show people that others are going through this, that it's unfortunately a part of life for some people, and to normalize the conversation about pregnancy loss, you know, and everything that goes with it. Because even amongst my close group of girlfriends, about half of us have experienced miscarriage. So I just didn't feel it was talked about enough. It was still very much a taboo subject. And I think the more women maybe in the public eye or with some sort of profile or you know, media profile that can talk about it, the better. I think it's just so important to give that support and comfort to anyone going through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you did such an amazing job that night. And again, I think you had the nation wanting to like just embrace you and look after you. And talk to me a little bit about surrogacy. Obviously, I'm so interested in this because, as I said, we came to the decision during lockdown that I didn't want to be pregnant again. Not that I don't want to be pregnant again, but having been through everything I've been through in the last couple of years, I just think surrogacy would be a better option for us, because I think if I was to become pregnant again, I would be highly anxious about my own health, even though my doctors have massively reassured me. But I just think for us as a family, it's the best option. And when you said you went to Ukraine, it gave me a lot of hope, and it felt like, oh God, maybe this can happen for us too. You know, if Rosanna can do it and talk about it, and it was such a success for her, then maybe it can be for us too. And you've obviously learned so much about surrogacy, because I think for a lot of people it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
But is it a case that when once you're in the system, it's kind of, you feel much more reassured by everything that's happening?
Yes. I mean, with surrogacy, it's very much it's a long process, and it's not something to go into without, you know, a lot of consideration and thought. Mm-hmm. Yet it's very, you know, once it works, you know, it's an incredible route to parenthood. So when we decided to do it, we had been told by the fifth consultant I'd seen that there was nothing more he could do for me, that I couldn't possibly keep on going with all the medication I was on, from, you know, corticosteroids to I was doing these injections to I was getting intravenous drips to suppress my immune system. So I was a little bit, I suppose, horrified by the idea initially of somebody else carrying our child in a different country. But I actually remember the day, it was mid-February in 2018, and Wes and I were visiting my brother and his fiance, well, now fiance, in London. And I just said, let's do it. I don't know, it's just something clicked in me. And I think things like that, you need a few weeks to think about them and play them around in your head. And then it just became a situation where it felt like our only chance to become parents. So the next day, well, we went home the next day, but on the Monday morning I contacted a solicitor in Dublin who specializes in surrogacy law. Had a long chat with her. She gave me a list of recommended clinics and agencies in Ukraine, having told me that Ukraine is particularly good for married Irish couples. And we just went from there. I was actually doing a full-time master's degree in 2018. So I was at my desk pretty much all day anyway. So it gave me, you know, lunch hours, I suppose, to do a lot of research into it. And I just started by emailing the various clinics. I think it was the first one that came back to me was the one we ended up going with. And, you know, their English was excellent. And we got a full sort of PDF brochure of everything we need to know about surrogacy in Ukraine. And it was about 11 pages long. And obviously there's an awful lot of medical and legal stuff involved. But then if you have kind of the right medical and legal advice and work with a lawyer who's really experienced, then that's the best first step you can take. And I'd always say to anyone, because I have received so many emails and messages from people asking about surrogacy and saying, know where to begin, always begin with a lawyer, because they'll point you in the right direction.
And your surrogate, you made the decision that you weren't going to be texting each other and getting to know each other. Is that the case there?
Yes. Well, with this type of commercial surrogacy in Ukraine, they do give you the option to meet your surrogate beforehand. Okay. But I suppose with us, well, we didn't have the chance in the end because our paths didn't cross. The implantation process took place for her a couple of weeks after we had done my egg retrieval. Mm-hmm. So we were home at that stage. But we also just felt that we wanted to keep it very businesslike, I suppose, that maybe getting to know her wouldn't be beneficial. I was, you know, struggling with all these emotions still of, you know, this woman is carrying our child or will be carrying our child if it all works out. And I'm not getting the chance to go through pregnancy. And I was so desperate to, you know, to experience pregnancy as well, that I just felt it was better just to focus on maybe the medical side of the pregnancy and the whole process. So really we did. I mean, I found the agency were fantastic, and the clinic, incredibly professional. We felt very much supported by them in sort of medical and legal ways. There were no hidden costs anywhere. Everything was very much out in the open from the beginning. I think what took the longest time actually and the most stressful for us was getting through the initial tests in Ireland. So we had to be able to show that biologically we were healthy enough, first of all, for me to go through the egg retrieval process. And if anyone's done IVF, you know kind of what's involved. There's a lot of hormones being injected. You want to make sure that maybe you're not at high risk of ovary stimulation or ovarian stimulation, and that you know, there aren't any other complications to really know about. So that took the best part of a year, really. I think we started the tests in maybe the end of February and finished them up probably the end of January 2019. I will say, of course, obviously the Irish system isn't set up for this extensive testing, and we did everything from, you know, hormone tests to blood clotting panels to infectious diseases, all that kind of thing. I don't think it would take this long now for you, say, or for anyone else. Just we had so many different delays along the way, and like I had to meet a certain consultant about a blood clotting test I had to do, and it took like a month to get to him, and then a month for the test to come back, and then we just were hit with all sorts of unfortunate delays. But I did have a very supportive GP. So if you can, you know, really talk to your GP if you're going to start a surrogacy process, and really let them know what's involved, give them a list of all the tests involved. She was great at kind of fast forwarding different tests. And at one stage, she sent me to the laboratory at UCD with the blood sample, because it's quicker than sending yourself it through, through a courier. So things like that.
Wow.
So then we, as I said, we signed the contract. So during the time we were getting tests back, we signed the contracts, got that all done. There's a lot of again, it's useful to get your lawyer to look through the contracts, because there's a lot of Ukrainian translations as well in there. But we eventually got it all signed, as I said, on the 11th of November 2018. And then they found, as I said to you, I was doing this master's at the time, which if anyone's done a full-time master's in a year, it's demanding. So 2018 was a year that I don't hold fondly in my memory. It was just a long sort of cycle of blood tests followed by, you know, dissertation research, essays, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the day I handed in my dissertation in mid-January 2019 was the day we found our surrogate, or they found our surrogate.
Okay.
We were very conscious of, you know, being with a system or being with an agency and clinic that really looked after their surrogates. You know, there was no exploitation. Everybody was very much cared for, again, medically, legally, financially, and we felt confident that she would be. So our surrogate was found. I think it took 6 weeks just to get, or even less, 4 weeks maybe, to get her tested and all her tests through to show she was healthy enough kind of hormonally, and you know, her uterus was healthy enough. But she has a child already. So surrogates in the Ukraine anyway need to already have had a healthy baby naturally.
I think that's really interesting, because you think, what if they run away, or, you know, that sort of way, all these things, nightmare scenarios kind of run through your brain. But it's so normal there, isn't it? That, you know, there's all these systems in place that this surrogate must have their own child already.
Yeah. And it's very much, because it's legal there, it's very much part of the culture. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, I can see it as, I mean, it's a very attractive way for, say, a young woman with a child to stay at home while making an income, because you pay them monthly. So they're very much looked after. All the contracts are, you know, signed in place to make sure that she can't just change her mind, or very much covered legally by the Ukrainian legal system. Mm-hmm. And then as well in Ireland, we're covered, you know, the kind of legalities are in place to a certain extent. But anyway, we felt confident that it would be okay. So just then from there, we went over in February 2019 to Kiev, and we were there for about 3 weeks while I was doing the egg retrieval process. You know, did that. It's not the most comfortable.
No.
The couple of days before, you know, we wanted to still get out and about before the process or the procedure took place. But I was walking, I mean, so slowly. Poor Wes had to sort of prop me up, because you're just, your abdomen gets so swollen and so uncomfortable. It's like carrying around bags of marbles. In a way, I think back fondly of that time, because I was carrying Sophia in me as a little egg.
It's such a beautiful way to look at it.
Think of it like that. Yeah. So I did feel, got to carry her my whole life, but I was aware of her being in there at that stage.
Wow. And when the time came for your surrogate to give birth, what was that day like? You must have been absolutely so nervous, so many emotions.
So many emotions. I mean, we'd only met her the week before, and it was surreal being in the same room with this woman with a bump that's your child. I mean, it's hard to even sort of comprehend to me still. And I think I was still in shock even meeting her.
How did you
she
feel
was probably
about
in shock
her?
Meeting me, to be honest.
did you feel
just overwhelming gratitude?
Yeah.
I just wanted to give her the biggest hug.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've said thank you to her probably a million times at this stage, because I've really felt that she really cared about giving us a family and giving us our miracle child. And, you know, as I said, she's still kept in touch, and we do chat by WhatsApp every month or so. So she did want to give us this gift, and, you know, it felt like more than just a business transaction for her. You know, so the day, I think we were in Kiev about 2 weeks before I got the call to run into hospital, and we had the bags packed and everything ready to go. And I think we'd walked the length and breadth of Kiev at that stage, tried every restaurant and everything as we were waiting, and got the call. I just hopped out of the shower actually on that Thursday morning, 21st of November, got the call from the pregnancy coordinator to say that our surrogate was in labor and her contractions were every 60 seconds or so to get your ass to the hospital. Baby is on the way. And she'd had a quick labor as well with her own child. So we kind of expected that. And so rushed to the hospital in an Uber, got in, and we had a room to stay in for a few days with Sophia. So dumped our bags, and then we ended up having about an hour to spare. So I got to dry my hair and sort of, you know, you just want
prepare
to
prepare yourself.
Yeah, feel nice for meeting your baby. So yeah, prepare ourselves as well emotionally. And then we got the call to go upstairs, and God, getting into the lift saying we're about to meet our daughter. It was just amazing. We have it all kind of recorded as well to show her in the future. And then it's always this bit, I got a bit shaky. We walked into the room and Sophia was just crowning, and, you know, so she came out and I cut her cord, and she was given to the midwife just, you know, to clean, and they do all the tests. Just kind of measure her and make sure she's yelling enough, which she was. And I just turned to our surrogate and I was bawling, crying. I mean, inconsolably crying, just with joy and relief. And like, how have I just witnessed? I mean, how can you even sort of prepare yourself to watch your child being born by somebody else? And sorry, it's always, I just lose
you have me bawling here as well.
It's just, I've thought about it every day since. I suppose the more we get to know Sophia and the more we just love her to bits, the more I just think, I can't believe, you know, I watched her being born as well. Anyway, so I turned to the surrogate and just said, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, you know, just over and over again. And she was obviously exhausted at this stage after giving birth. So she was just smiling kind of weakly at me. And then after that, we were just handed Sophia, and we got the skin to skin contact with her and the cuddles, and she started looking for milk. She went for Wes's nipple. Like, you're not gonna find much milk there. So we just brought her down to our room, and
and wrapped her up and snuggled her and fed her. I remember that night we just didn't sleep. I just sat up all night watching her, obviously to check if she was breathing. I think as a new parent, you're just so terrified, but also just staring at her, just going, I can't believe you're finally here after, you know, everything we've been through to get you.
So much pain. And
yeah.
And look, what was the moment like, you know, when you're the three of you are together, like your fam, this is your family now. Mm. I mean, Wes obviously had been through so much as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's so hard for the guys to see you suffer. Like Jamie watched me really suffer through my cancer journey.
Of course,
and I'm sure, and they suffer too.
Yeah.
But just to kind of have this beautiful moment, the three of you together.
And the men are expected to be strong, and I suppose they put pressure on themselves to be strong as well. So Wes was just overjoyed. I mean, the happiness on his face. We were only looking back at the pictures there recently, I think just before Father's Day. And I was just looking at ones of him staring at Sophia soon after we got back to the room with her.
I think your love for each other is so clear. And I'm just so happy for you that you have this amazing time in your life is happening. And I'm always really interested to know how you felt coming into Dublin Airport with her, because bringing her home must have been just the most incredible feeling.
It was. I mean, for obviously so many different reasons, but we'd spent 2 weeks in Kiev after her birth, just sorting out the paperwork we needed to get home. So got that done and got on the flight and landed. And, you know, it was the 7th of December, and you know how lovely Dublin Airport looks at Christmas. It's all lit up and decorated. So it was lovely even landing in to kind of Christmas time in Dublin. And it hadn't felt like Christmas at all kind of up till then. So that was lovely firstly. But then carrying her through in her car seat, my dad was waiting for us in arrivals. And I'll be off again now. But yeah, there were a lot of tears. My dad, obviously, this is his first time meeting his first grandchild. So it was a really special moment. And again, we kind of recorded it all. So we'll put together a little video of her.
And was your dad alone in arrivals? Was he?
Wes's sister was there as well, because we needed a couple of cars for baby seat, luggage, all the stuff we'd had over with us. So it was just, a really lovely moment. And then drove home, and Wes and I had left all the baby stuff out, you know, the changing table, the cot, just everything ready to go. But his mum had been in as well, maybe a couple of days before we got home, and decorated it. So she put up a Christmas tree and balloons and banners and all sorts of things. And we just got a lovely welcome home. The whole family was there. Our two families were there to welcome us home. Sophia was fast asleep. She wasn't aware of any of it. But it was just a lovely welcome home. And it just felt real, you know, to be able to get home that night and put her to bed in her sidecar cots, whatever they call them. Was just amazing. And then to wake up in the morning, if we did sleep that night, I can't even remember, probably a couple of hours here and there, just to wake up in the morning with her and just get on with our lives as a family was lovely.
I think it's so special to see the relationship between your child and your parents. For me anyway, it's so incredibly special. And then especially for your parents to have seen you suffer same way as I was saying with Wes. But you know, I think it's only when you have your own child that you realize, God, what must they have been going through watching me go through something so serious. So to have kind of this day when you're all together and you have your little gorgeous daughter, it's just must have been so special.
Just so special. And they were just so thrilled for us. Because there was a time a few years ago when I was preparing myself for life, possibly with no children, and I was trying to prepare them and say to them, you know, if you don't become grandparents, then we'll go travel, or, you know, we'll find joy elsewhere in life. So I had to, it was not only me I was preparing, it was them possibly for, you know, having no grandchildren. I mean, obviously my brothers have partners, so hopefully at some stage they will, but they weren't at that stage showing any signs of settling down. So I was kind of their only hope for a while. You know, so there are so many other people involved, I think, when you're going through that kind of struggle as well. There are two families involved. So now they have the excitement of welcoming two more later this year. And my parents both predicted boys. I was convinced I was having girls for some reason. And my mum said to me one day, back probably the start of June, she goes, I woke up this morning, I just had this vision in my head of two little blonde boys, and I think you're having boys. And my dad, kind of the same day, said, yeah, we're so strongly predicting boys. It was when I was around 10 weeks pregnant, I'd say. And yeah, sure enough, they were right. So they were very pleased with themselves.
Do people say to you now, like, it's kind of like Irish triplets? You know the way they say it's like, yes, Irish twins when they're born within a year of each other. So you'll have a one-year-old, a baby who's just turned one,
yeah,
and two brand new babies. And I know I've heard like interviews where people are saying, oh, you're going to be wrecked and da-da-da. But you're obviously just like, this is the greatest gift on earth for me.
To be honest, I've been wrecked most of the year.
Yeah.
Being pregnant with twins while looking after a baby. My God, I'm knackered.
How have you gotten through that?
I'm knackered most of the time, to be honest.
Yeah.
There were a few weeks in March where I had energy because Sophia was sleeping through the night, and then I got pregnant and then just felt exhausted again. So I think I'm just used to being tired all the time. But just, yeah, lots of support. Wes is back in work now though, so I am at home with her a lot myself. But my mum, for example, was over this afternoon, and she comes over and says, now put your feet up, get yourself a cup of tea, I'll look after the baby for a few hours. So that's really nice that we do have loads of help in that sort of respect. But yeah, I underestimated maybe things like baby brain and how sort of forgetful and clumsy you get and just how hungry. I'm just hungry all the time, and maybe it's a twin thing. I'm not sure. Maybe it's double the hunger. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm constantly thinking about my next meal, and like, I panic if the fridge is empty. And, you know, during the first trimester, I did have, you know, quite bad kind of all day nausea. But in the moments when I didn't have it, you know, you just get this hunger. And I got up in the night more times than I cared to think about to make pasta or a porridge. I just needed carbs right now. So I guess, I mean, your body is growing my body was growing not only to humans from scratch, but also a placenta, which is a whole organ, I suppose, in itself. So and you need food to grow. So I definitely fed myself and still do. So yeah, I'm enjoying that part of it too.
I think there's so many exciting times for you guys ahead. And thank you so much again for coming on my podcast today, for sharing your amazing story, for giving us all hope, for just being so honest about it. And it's just so incredible. And I hope that you feel the love that everyone has for you and how excited everyone is, and mind yourself and enjoy this special time.
Thank you. I will. And I do. And I just want to thank everyone again who's shown us so much love and support. It just means the absolute world to us.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more of my story, follow me on Instagram, Georgie.book.